I like stretching to see how fast I can run. And obviously over the years, I got faster, 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 faster. And then as the years went by, I've got slower, slower, slower. However, I still really like seeing how fast I can run.
Diz Runs Radio episode 425 starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, real quick, before we get started today, I'm really excited to be welcoming a new sponsor on board today. You're going to be hearing a lot about runningshoesguru.com in the coming months. They've signed on to be around for a little while, which is fantastic. And, you know, it's an amazing resource. I get a lot of questions about shoes, and you guys know where I stand as far as what kind of shoes I like. I'm an ultra guy, but I'm not, you know, blinded enough to think that ultras are the only good shoes out there. They're the shoes that work great for me. I love them, but there's lots of great shoes out there. And, you know, if you're looking for the kind of a kind of shoe that's right for you, or if you're looking for some reviews on some new models and kind of, you know, what to expect, what's this shoe like? I can't recommend enough that you head over to runningshoesguru.com. Check it out. All kinds of options. And one of the cool things that they do is each and every month they do a giveaway for a free pair of shoes. And this month the giveaway is for a pair of Nike Pegasus 34s. So if you want to get entered, and I would encourage you to do so, it's a great way to obviously not only get yourself a chance for a free pair of shoes, but to also show them that you appreciate their sponsorship of the show. Head over to runningshoesguru.com/giveaways, and certainly there will be a link in the show notes for that as well. But get yourself entered, get your name and email address, I think, is all it takes to get entered. And then there's ways that you can get even more entries. So, you know, definitely do that. Check it out. Look around the site and see what your shoes rate. You know, see what whatever shoes you're wearing. Check out the site and see what the rating is. And you know, just look around. Like I said, great resource. Lots of other articles as well beyond just the shoes. So check them out. Thank you again to the folks at runningshoesguru.com because it's appreciated. The support is appreciated. So now let's go ahead and get on with today's episode of the show. Hey guys, today on the show, I'm running with someone that definitely loves having that sense and feeling of freedom. My guest today has been running and traveling the world for most of her life, but recently she and her husband sold almost all of their possessions and set off to live the lives of nomads and see the world. While traveling, my guest definitely loves sightseeing and exploring her current locale by running the streets and whatever trails might be available. This running, however, is done barefoot. So with that as a setup, it's a pleasure to be able to welcome the barefoot nomad herself, Miss Julia Kai Taylor, to the show. Thanks for joining us today, Julia.
Hi.
Almost screwed up that last name, but I got it. I saved it.
No, thank you. It's really, really brilliant to be here. I'm delighted to be with you, running with you.
Yes,
fabulous.
Yes,
barefoot,
indeed.
I hope you've got your shoes off.
I've got the sandals on, so we're kind of splitting the difference between the one and the other. But guys, if you want to check out what Julia's got going on, make sure you check out her website and blog, where she's blogging all about the travels she's on and what's going on with her life and her running. Soulsjourney.com is the website. And on the Twitter, you can connect with Julia there at Julia Taylor and then just the number one. So Julia Taylor one, all one big word. On Instagram, it's at Julia Kai, C-H-I, and then underscore at the end of that one. And on Facebook, you can find her, Julia Kai Taylor. And you can also find her YouTube channel. She's got some YouTube stuff going on, which is soulsjourneytv.com, which will take you right to her YouTube channel. And you can see some of the places she's running, which is definitely beautiful and a sight to behold. And we'll have those links to all of those places to contact Julia and anything else that we talk about that makes sense to link to in the show notes for today's episode, as we usually do. And this episode is 425. So dizruns.com/425 will take you right there. So, Julia, the way we always start off the show is with a very simple and straightforward question that sometimes has a pretty simple answer, and sometimes it's a little bit more twisted and convoluted and takes us down to rabbit holes that maybe I never could have predicted. But it's just to simply ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
My favorite distance to race, which I haven't actually raced for a long time, is 10 miles. And nowadays, to be honest, there aren't as many 10-mile races as there used to be back in the day, because I have been running a long, 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 long time. And I like 10 miles. Why did I like 10 miles? I think because I could go, I found 10Ks and 5Ks there was that extra anaerobic element to it. Mm-hmm. And a half marathon always seemed a bit far, and a marathon really much too far. Whereas 10 miles, I could really run fast. And yet it was over before I got too tired.
Yeah,
does that make sense?
No, it perfectly does. And I've feel like I pretty much agree with you. I mean, I've run a couple of 10 mile races. There's not very many. I mean, there's like one in our area. And it was real popular the first year, and it kind of, you know, dwindled down the second. And I don't remember even if there was a third year. And now it's, you know, I don't think there's been enough popularity to bring it back, but it's just, I'm the same way. Like, it's such a good distance of you work hard, but it's not too much and it's not too long and you can push it. But yeah, it's a good distance. I wish there were more of them.
Yeah. Well, it was, I think they were the first road races that I ran, because I was a cross country and a track runner. And then I did a 10 mile race, and it was, again, hardly any women were running, and it was years and years and years ago. And I was really fit. So 10 miles, I'd been racing 3 miles and things, but I could easily run 10 miles. And I think it must have got into my being. And I love 10 mile racing.
Yeah, it's. I would love to see more, but I mean, I don't know what it's like on that side of the pond that you're on, and all the different places that you end up. But over here in America, it's like the half marathon is just blowing up with popularity. There's new half marathons all the time, and of course there's some marathons that go along with it. But yeah, that middle range stuff, that even the 10K isn't very popular over here, at least in Florida and in kind of the area I am. But it's like 5Ks everywhere, half marathons and longer everywhere. But that 10K 10 mile ish distance, there's just not a whole lot of it.
No, in our part of the world, you're right. The half marathon and marathon and everything is massive. What I think is brilliant, because I was running before the marathon boom kind of took off. But what I think is brilliant is the fact that all these park runs taken off, and you know the 5K, meaning that lots of people can go and do it without massive amounts of training or extreme damage to their bodies. So I like the fact there's lots of 5Ks, but you're right, the 10 miles seems to have vanished, which is, perhaps we can surge it back.
Yeah, well, and there's a couple of real big ones over here in the States. There's the Cherry Blossom, which is in Washington, D.C., and there's a Broad Street one, I believe, in Philadelphia, and I think there might be one in New York City as well. So it's kind of like that northeast quarter of the United States has some, but other than that, like, yeah, it's really hit and miss, and everybody that I've talked to that has run one seems to enjoy it. So yeah, I think somebody needs to put some more 10 milers together.
Yeah,
bring it back.
You've inspired me, because I want to come and do some more running in the States, because I ran the New York Marathon in 1987, would you believe? And I've done quite a bit of running in the States when I was younger, and I'd love to come back and do some running in the States. So now the Cherry Blossom, I remember, I haven't done it, but I've heard of it. So yeah, you're an inspire me. You see, the next thing we'll know is I'll be leaping on plane to America.
There we go. That is one race, the Cherry Blossom, that I've never heard anyone say anything bad about. I'm sure somebody somewhere in the world has something that they didn't enjoy about that race, but everybody that I've talked to, everybody online and in person on the podcast, everybody seems to love the Cherry Blossom. So yeah, if you can make it happen, head on over and run it. It's
supposed
to be a good time.
I'm going to write that on my list. I have a kind of list of when I think of a race or a country or a destination or somewhere I want to go, I write it down, and then it usually kind of occurs eventually.
Yeah, put it down, write it down, get it on paper, and things start to happen.
Yeah, then it's sort of happened. There we are. It's going down now as we speak. The
perfect.
Cherry Blossom.
Perfect. So you've mentioned, you know, a couple times here that you've been running, you know, and racing a long time ago, back in the late 70s and the 80s. You were in your prime and really, you know, a force to be reckoned with, running, you know, winning a couple of races and doing real well at London. What was it, in 86 maybe, that you were top 10 at the marathon?
I was the seventh woman and third British in 86. Yeah, so 31 years ago.
But how did you, you kind of even go back maybe a little bit farther. I remember looking at the website, and basically it sounded like you said you've been running pretty much your whole life. How did you, was that just something that you did even as a kid, or where did you get started in the running scene?
I came out running, I think, according to the stories, the stories I'm told about me as a child. I was born in Africa, in West Africa, and I ran from the moment I could walk. I walked really early. I walked at 9 months. And then I'm told that I went onto my tippy toes very quickly, and then I ran everywhere. And I never walked. I think I drove my parents mad and all my teachers and any adult that came upon me as a child, because I just ran absolutely everywhere. And I can remember getting into trouble for being ahead on family walks and, you know, Julia, come back, mm-hmm. trying to rein in this child. And I remember myself at 6 years old knowing I wanted to be a runner. I knew that I wanted to win, and I used to get my dad to time me then. I used to get him to take me to the playing fields, and I would race from one end to the other and get him to time me, and then I'd try and beat my own time. And I didn't really, in those days, because that was obviously, I was born in 1959, so there wasn't the influences. I don't remember seeing things on television. I just remember the urge within myself to see how fast I could run. And so I think it was just in me. Mm. Yeah. I then started running races. I remember at school, you know, I liked winning. I really loved it. But I also loved just seeing, really, I think the essence of me right from a young thing has been to see how fast I can go. But in me was a fast running energy. So I tended to, come up high up in the field. But right from the very beginning, I put myself in races that were challenging. So I was always putting myself in county championships, national championships, and then international races. Mm-hmm. So often I didn't win, in fact, but I didn't mind that. What meant more to me, and still does, and I think it's probably why I'm still running, is I like seeing, I like stretching to see how fast I can run. And obviously over the years, I got faster. And then as the years went by, I've got slower. However, I still really like seeing how fast I can run. Mm-hmm. It's fun. And I still have the same, I've put different lines in the sand. I put different lines in the sand when I turned, 40, 50. And now I'm running barefoot. I've put another lines in the mm-hmm. sand. So I've always got that fun of finding out. I love it. I just love it.
With that kind of competitive and certainly with the competitiveness against yourself, like you just mentioned, with that kind of in mind, I talk to a lot of, whether it's social media, whether it's through the podcast again, whether, a variety of different ways of talking to a lot of runners that, have never been competitive on the national, international type of stage, but a lot of folks that are very much competitive with themselves and the struggle that they have when they get to that point when they're starting to they're getting older and they can't run as fast as they could 10 years ago, even though maybe their fitness is even better now, but just physiologically and where they are in life, it's just not quite, what it was 10, 15 years ago. How have you, I on one hand, I can see that, like you said, you draw a new line in sand. This is what I'm working towards. This is kind of where I am now. But on the other hand, is it difficult for someone who has always been as competitive with as you are against yourself to deal with kind of the fact that as you're getting older, you are slowing down? Has that been a struggle at all?
No, it hasn't actually, strangely. I think within me, the 19-year-old is very alive and she thinks that we can still run as fast as we did. And she thinks, what on earth are you doing running this slowly? And she thinks that probably, amazingly, we're going to suddenly run as fast as we used to. I think I've got I'm a very naturally optimistic being. I've also, I have a lot of fun in life. I'm also a coach. I've worked in other people's lives since I was in my late teens. So I suppose I have heard my wisdom and I adhere to what I teach. And I've heard I'm a very, I'm very able to be very wise in other people's lives and have been right as a natural energy from when I was very young. And I think I've learned by hearing what I've said a lot of the time. I also think that, I think there's something in me that has adjusted. Now, how have I done this? It's an interesting question because clearly I'm a lot slower. I mean, the times I run now are so different to how I was as a young person. It feels the same. I think one of the things that's really helped me is that I've really, really, I was very chronically injured at the end of my international career. So in my 30s, I had lots and lots of back problems and knee problems and ankle problems. And I really didn't want to go and be that story of having been a very fast runner who now couldn't really walk. And so I really spent a lot of time and energy and money on my body when I was in my late 30s to go and investigate all of this kind of stuck pain in my back and, you know, all of these kind of chronic injuries, which I think had come about as well through driving hard and pushing hard and never, ever really probably being satisfied. So I think that as a driven runner in my teens and 20s, I would finish races, you know, times which are now my personal bests, and be disappointed and go, I want to do better. My best marathon time is 2:36, and I crossed the line and I looked at the watch and I was disappointed because I wanted to run 2:32. So I think that I'm someone who's always been, excuse me, someone who's wanting to learn how to be at peace and how to be still. And I think the zen of running has been vital for me all my life, but it was obviously a difficult lesson to actually get to be at ease with running, you know, with what I could run. So therefore, as I kind of healed those injuries by lots and lots of inner work, lots of sort of, you know, emotional work, psychological work, to go in and see where I'd got this overdrive pattern that was never satisfied when I was running at my fastest, then the interesting thing is I've learned as I've, you know, not been running as fast to be happy with what I've run, which is the kind of paradox, isn't it, really, I suppose. And as I say, I've always coached people. And I think that there's always been something new. So, you know, turning 50 was fun. Oh, when I was in my late 40s, I turned and did a couple of ultras. Now the running barefoot's fun. I think I've always found a way for a new vista to open up for me.
Yeah, that's probably good advice if you know, for people that when they kind of find themselves flatlining, whether it's because of age or just, you know, they're kind of at their, you know, they plateaued a little bit, maybe, you know, looking for something different, whether it's ultras, whether it's shorter stuff, going to the track. I've had folks now that, you know, as adults that never ran track as kids, and they find, you know, masters events and things like that where they can run the track, and just something different maybe can spice things up big time for you.
Yeah, I agree. I think that finding new things, like now, there's so many races you can do abroad, or there's a guy, a friend of mine, who had a, you know, traveling tour agency, who, you know, running kind of agency, and people can go away and do races abroad. And there's all these new possibilities, and park runs. You know, I think the park run movement, it means people turn up and there's the camaraderie and there's the cakes and the coffee and there's, you know, there's a PB or there isn't a PB and it doesn't matter as much. I think there are a lot of ways to make it fun. And I mean, that's really life as well, isn't it? That kind of new things, new possibilities. And I think that I've seen that with working in people's lives, that people can get tired and disappointed by life or work or lots of things. And it's how to find out where you're stuck inside, really, because then it can open up again. And yeah, I find it's always, I think I'll always be, you know, someone who I love to run. I'd love to. I'm 58, because obviously if you can do their maths. I realized years and years and years ago that I was envious of musicians and actors and people who I witnessed and thought, oh, they'll be able to do their creativity and their art all of their lives. And I always thought, maybe, you know, particularly back when I was running, that you kind of retired. And now I realize you don't have to. But the key for me is keeping agile and injury-free and, you know, that mobility in my body, because I would love to keep running because I love the feeling of running. I am competitive. Clearly, I love racing. Absolutely love it. And I love having, you know, goals ahead. But I would love to keep running forever or until, you know, all the time I'm in this body. So therefore, keeping myself fit, and I mean fit on every level, is really important because it feels better that way. Just, yeah, fun.
Certainly. In your time, you know, of the last 30 plus years that you've, you know, from when you were at the kind of at your peak and doing, you know, all the international stuff and the national stuff and really running some of your best times to now, and this is always a fun question I like to ask folks that have been running for a really long time, can you put into words maybe how things have changed and also maybe how things have stayed the same? Because, you know, I think that what a lot of us, and I'm guilty of this too, that have been running only for maybe the last, you know, 6, 8, 10, maybe 12 years, don't realize how different running looked in the 80s as opposed to how it looks now.
Yeah, well, in the UK, I can talk a lot for the UK, of course, because that's where I'm from and that's where I was running. What I noticed is that the depth was greater. So, you know, I was times that I was running for 10 miles, half marathon. So I was running, you know, 73s and fours for half marathons and 55 for 10. And I was right down the male field. You know, I would be winning the female field or coming in the top five in the females, but I'd be 50th or so in the male field. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, in races around, that would be winning the male field. So mm-hmm. I've seen the depth drop. Obviously, at the world level, there's, you know, the levels still keep going up. But what I saw, what I've seen as the, as there's more participation, which I think is fabulous, and there's much more people taking, you know, taking part in the sport, enjoying the feeling of running, but the it's kind of dropped the standards a bit because, you know, when I was younger, we were very, you know, the times that we thought were good were much faster than what is thought of as a good time now. Now, as I say, that's not with any, I don't say that with any agenda, tone, criticism. It's just a different way of looking at the sport. And I think it was, it's important that the levels have dropped for people to be in a bigger participation, if that makes sense, because it means that it gives people a lot more hope and a lot more something to strive for. So I've noticed that, that that's very different. Mm. And I've noticed that there's a lot written about running, and in my view, running's very simple, and really you just have to go running a lot. So, and it's quite interesting for me to have seen, because I come from the time where, you know, I didn't have kit, I ran in bare feet actually then when I was a young child, and then I put some shoes on because I ran on a cinder track, but I used to do my training on a grass track in bare feet, and I just ran in school. I used to run home from school on the, get off the bus and run home, and I ran in my school uniform and put my gym shoes on. And so I didn't really have kit. And so I've seen a huge change, you know, in the shoe industry and the kit industry, and the amount that's written about it. As I say, really and truly, I think that to run well, you need to obviously do all the core strength and conditioning work to keep you aligned, and then run loads and loads and loads, and that's it really.
Yeah, it's so simple. We can sum it up in one sentence about all you need to do to be a great runner.
So, but I can see that, you know, people love it, and people loved it in my day. You know, we just went out and ran. And I just think it's fabulous that, I mean, it's strange to me that the thing that, when I was 15 and running, and, you know, used to get called out in the street because women weren't running, and my boyfriend, who was a couple of years older than me, didn't tell any of his friends that his girlfriend was a runner because he was embarrassed, because he thought they'd think that was very odd. Whereas now, of course, it's quite a completely different world, isn't it?
Right. It's a, well, and I, you know, again, I can't speak necessarily for other parts of the world, but I know here in the U.S., I mean, it's women that are leading the running boom. Like for every every male that picks up the sport, I don't know what the ratio is, but 3, 4, 5 women are getting in as well. So it's definitely over here. It's very popular for the ladies, which is, and for for everybody, of course, but the ladies especially. It's great to see that, you know, participating and doing something.
Yeah, fabulous.
So I want to shift gears a little bit and kind of get into some of what you've got going on right now, Julia. You know, the overarching theme, and we'll kind of break this down a little bit as we go, but you know, kind of deciding to sell everything. And I was watching one of the videos, the vlog posts that you had on your YouTube channel, kind of skimming through a few of them, and I remember hearing, you know, we sold pretty much everything, and you know, all the cars and this and that, and basically everything that couldn't fit into a bag or two, and we're traveling now. So before that started, I mean, you know, it's kind of one of those things that I think a lot of people dream about, like, oh yeah, I'd love to just be able to not be tied down and just travel and do whatever we want to do. But nobody, you know, very few people put that into motion and actually make it happen. So what was the genesis of that idea for you and your husband to get rid of all of, you know, almost all of your earthly possessions and just travel around and see the world? What how did that get started?
Well, I think that anyway, Anadi and I have been, we're quite free, you know, could be termed as free spirits anyway. Mm. Neither of us have been particularly people who wanted to own masses. So I think our essence is that anyway. And we've both been traveling beings before we met each other. I traveled the world with my running, and Anadi traveled the world. He was in India a lot, and he's been a traveling person. So I think the essence of us was that anyway. How it happened literally was a conversation. It was 4 years ago, and or was it 5 years ago? No, 4 years ago, we just happened to be on holiday, actually, on a Greek island on Santorini. And Anadi said to me, I think we should do more of this, i.e. travel. And the words that came out of my mouth were, what about my work? Because I've been for years, as I said, working with people, and I had a practice with lots and lots of people coming to me as a therapist with their troubles and, you know, all sorts of things. And so that were the first words that came out of my mouth. And then we thought, well, maybe we could go away for 12 weeks of the year, you know, 3 weeks, four lots of 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. Anyway, 3 days later, we were having dinner, and I said, if we are going to travel more, why do we need to own anything? And Anadi said, well, I'm up for that. And that literally was it. Literally, literally, we did not look back. We got home from our holiday, and then we took a year to shed everything, because, just everything we owned. I just have a backpack, which is about 10 kilos worth of possessions. And Anadi has a little bit more than me, but still it's only, you know, what you can fit on hand luggage. We don't have anything that we put in the hold. So it took a year. And also I did have a practice working with people, so I didn't want to, you know, abandon everybody. Mm-hmm. So I took a year to just transform my business and change it. And then we just went, and we haven't looked back, and absolutely love it. I really, really love it. And what happened with my work was people followed me. So I worked on Skype, obviously. This is great, mm-hmm. isn't it? We could talk to people all over the world, and people came out to me to work on themselves, spend a few days away. And I'm saying it in the past tense, because at the beginning of May, I took a break, because I've, funnily enough, in the last 3 years, done more work with people than ever in my life. It was the strangest thing. And Anadi's a programmer, and he's got a business, iSports Analysis, which is sports analysis, which he's created actually as we've been on the road. Mm. So he, as long as he's got internet, can work everywhere. So literally it was one conversation, and then we headed off, and we never looked back.
Have you been do you travel constantly, or do you kind of find a place and bed down for several months and then move on, or how does that part of it work out?
Well actually we quite like moving. We at the beginning we stayed in places for maybe a month or up to 2 months, but we've found that we like to keep moving, and it's a nice, we like the feeling of kind of clearing out everything. We cleared out all our possessions, but we're also both interested in clearing at a deep level. As I said to you with my running, you know, I wanted to clear out any blocks, clear out anything inside me. And we both have that orientation of a freedom within. And we found that by moving and staying in a place, you know, a couple of weeks, 3 weeks, moving on and then another place, we find that it's a freer feeling for us. And yet we have got places we return to and feel that we are part of the community, we know the people there, and we drop in and kind of pick up where we left off, and then on we go again.
What are some of the places that you've been? I mean, is it mostly in Europe, or has it literally been all over the world, or where have you traveled to so far?
It's been a lot in Europe, but we have been out of Europe. We've been to Costa Rica, and we've been to Thailand, and we've been to the Caribbean, and Anadi's been to South Africa because his work took him there. But I had a lot of work myself, so I stayed in Europe. We've been all over Europe. Yes, France. Everywhere. I can't think of the places in Europe.
Right, right. Yeah, certainly.
Spain. Spain, Malta, Gozo. Yeah, I love it. We're in Spain now. I love Spain. I'm learning Spanish. So, and we want to come over to the States. So, yeah, all over the place, really. Wow. But and go back to the UK. Yeah, drop into the UK for a couple of weeks now and again. And last year I went back to the UK while Anadi was in South Africa. I dropped back into the UK for 2 weeks in the middle of winter, and that was fun. It's fun to go and experience winter for 2 weeks and then leave it again.
and then be gone. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that was that.
Goodness. It's one of those things, like I said, it's something that I think personally, like I would love to have that freedom, but then like, you know, what have I done to put myself in a position to be able to make that happen? Like not so much. So maybe I should stop wanting something like that and at least start, you know, looking at how to make that kind of thing happen.
Well, what's interesting is that the more you are on the road like we've been, you meet other people who are the same. Mm-hmm. It's fascinating. We've met other nomads. We've met other people who've sold up. And this wonderful social media that we're in now, mm-hmm. I have loads of Instagram connections of us nomads. Mm-hmm. So you find out there's more. And probably, again, in give it another 10 years, there'll be many more. Right. People living this way because of the computers and, you know, digital nomads, basically, because you can make your living online. And, you know, like you're doing now, we're talking in Spain and the States. So it's good.
Yep. And speaking of what I'm doing now, I take a second and pay a couple bills. And it's funny how things work out sometimes because today's sponsor is runningshoesguru.com, which is funny because you don't really run with shoes, Julia. So, you know, one of the questions that I get most often from folks that listen to the show, from people I work with that I coach or you know, connect on social media is, you know, what do you think about this pair of shoes? What do you think about that pair of shoes? And like, you know, like a lot of runners, I have the shoes that I tend to wear that work really well for me. And I know a lot about the ultras, which I talked about several times on the show, but I don't know a lot about all of the other shoes. And you don't know a lot about probably any modern shoes these days, which is a story for that we'll get to in just a second. But guys, for those of you that are looking for information on shoes, like I want to get a new pair of shoes or the shoes I love got discontinued, where can I find a shoe that's similar? You definitely got to head over to the good folks at runningshoesguru.com. They've got literally hundreds of different models, different shoes that have been reviewed that people have run in and tested and you know, they're not giving opinions on like, well, I don't like it. It's like, this is the shoe and these are the facts. These are the features. This is what it does. This is how it wears. So pretty much just about any types of shoes that you're looking for, you can find there. And if you go poking around here in the next several weeks, you might find yours truly writing a few reviews over there as well. So definitely check it out, all the different models and options. And one of the cool things that they do over there is they give away a free pair of shoes every month. There's a giveaway. There's a drawing that you can get into. And so if you head over to runningshoesguru.com/giveaways, and I'll make sure to have that link in the show notes so you can easily click over and click right over there, you can get entered to win a free pair of shoes. And this month, the shoes are the Nike Pegasus 34s. So you can head over there. Check out, find out what they think about your shoes. You know, if you love them, it doesn't matter what the reviewer thinks, but you can still check it out and see what they have to say and definitely get yourself registered to get a free pair of shoes as well. And stay tuned for whatever the next pair of shoes is next month, because every month they give another pair of shoes away. So thanks for runningshoesguru.com for being on board and looking forward to continue to work with them for a while. So you're going to be hearing more about them as we continue. But Julia, to get back to your situation with not wearing the shoes, you know, you mentioned that as when you were younger, you would do that sometimes running on the grass tracks and things of that nature. And, you know, I think a lot of folks can relate to maybe that idea of running through a field, doing some strides on a soccer field or whatever the case may be, doing some barefoot work for some of the strengthening and mobility and things like that, that can be benefits of running barefoot. But I mean, you do it no matter the terrain, no matter where you're running. What was the reasoning behind that? Why did you decide to get rid of the shoes and go au naturel with your running when it comes to your feet?
Well, a couple of things. One, just to say that when you mentioned Nike Pegasus, Nike Pegasus were one of my very first running shoes when I was in my early 20s. They must be a different kind of model now to then.
I'm sure.
So when you
bit,
said
yeah.
that, I was like, oh, wow, Nike Pegasus. I remember I had a lovely pair of Nike Pegasus. And also another thing is that in all my, you know, websites and all of that, the Soles Journey, the soles is actually S-O-L-E-S because it's the bottom of my soles rather than the sole, even though it is actually a kind of a soul journey, because it's something very, yeah, it's very, very real for me to run in my bare feet. Now, how it happened was, as a child, as I said, I came out running, and I was born in Africa, and I ran all on the beaches, and, you know, I was a free little child I don't think I wore anything, let alone shoes. So I was this naked child. And then I always loved, I ran in bare feet the entire, we came back to England when I was about four, and I ran in my bare feet all the time. And I can remember even when I was 11 running with my big cousin, who was 4 years older than me, running on the road in my bare feet. And I was a very tiny little child. I was, I'm a very natural runner. I've got a very natural running style. So it lent itself to running in bare feet. Then I joined my athletics club. And again, I, as I said to you, it was a grass track. So I did all of my training in my bare feet. And I can remember being asked to put shoes on for a race, and I didn't run very well. And then I cried, and then I felt all embarrassed because I shouldn't have been a bad loser. And I wasn't crying because I'd lost the race. I was crying because my feet were uncomfortable. So I think my natural soul expression, both in my and my feet, is very barefoot. And then I obviously wore shoes, but I wore the lightest shoes. Right back in the day, I wore Nike sock racers, and I'd run all my best marathons. I ran in kind of little slippers, really, Nike Eagles. I mean, they're probably makes that no one knows now, but they were incredibly light shoes. So my natural way was to, you know, and I prefer to train in a racing shoe. So I think for me, my body, my running style, everything lends itself to being in my bare feet. And also I have got funny toes. Of my middle toes are hammer toes, and I used to get a lot of Morton's Neuroma in shoes. So finding good shoes was such a difficult thing for me. It really, really was. And then about 10 years ago, when I was coming back from all my injuries, 17 years ago, I thought I had to have orthotics and things. So this is the irony, to try and straighten me out. And I remember resolving I would get free of it all again and get my feet strong. And it's taken me 17 years, basically, because 10 years ago, I first tried to go barefoot, and then I hurt my ankle, and then I hurt my calf, and then I tried again about 4 years later, and my ankle still weren't up to it. So what I'd say for anyone, again, I say this in all my vlogs and everything, anyone who's liking the idea of barefoot, it has to be taken very, very slowly. Mm-hmm. It has to be very considered. You have to really take your time and really get your feet strong. Now, how it's happened this time is last summer, I was taking a running course in the mountains in Spain here. It was a Zen running course, and I had 10 runners on the course, ranging from 16 years old to 70 years old. And it meant that I was racing up and down mountains because I had the 16-year-olds bounding up, and I was going down to look after the solo people. And so I was racing up the mountain, racing down the mountain, racing up the mountain, racing down the mountain, and didn't really look after myself. And I hurt my back. So my back then for about 6 weeks was in pain, lots of sciatica, and it wouldn't get better. And then I was on a beach in Lanzarote, and the surfers were warming up in their bare feet. And I thought, I wonder if I run in my bare feet, whether this will help my back again. Because my back was something I've worked with over the years. Anyway, I ran on this beach in Farmara, which is a 3-mile beach, and I had no pain. And then I just kept doing a bit more and a bit more, and I had no pain. And then I put my shoes on again, and my back hurt. So then I took my shoes off, and I ran on the beach, and it didn't hurt. And then I went back to the UK, and I'd ordered some Nike Freeze, because Nike Freeze really worked for me, because they were such a light shoe. Anyway, my Nike Freeze never appeared. And I'm not blaming Nike. It was some other, you know, right. I don't know where I ordered them from, but they never turned up. And so I didn't have any shoes. And I thought, okay, I'm going to keep going with this. And in October, I only ran 10 times in the whole of the month, and I did loads of foot exercises and gym work. And I was wearing Vivo barefoot shoes just to kind of ease me into it. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of January, I took them off, and then I haven't looked back. So it's a new thing, but I'm feeling amazing. And my running action has returned to as I was when I was a teenager. And there's a few of my vlogs that show me. There's one that my husband Nanadi did in slow motion of me doing a fartlek session. And I look at it and I go, wow, that looks like me when I was 19. I mean, as I said, I'm not running as fast then, but the right. But the action, I look the same and I feel the same. So for me, it's just, it's a very yeah, it's very energizing, very releasing. It feels like I've reconnected to myself, really, at a very profound level. So that's it. Long story, but...
right. No, that's perfect. I think that, you know, for the question I have, and probably the question that most people have, and probably the question that you've gotten, you know, dozens of times by anybody who sees you out running with no shoes on and you know, has a chance to talk to you or maybe questions from the blog or from whatever, is, you know, what when you step on stuff, when there's a stone, when there's, you know, gravel, when there's whatever, you know, like, cause I'm like you when it, as far as your shoe preference, I like a very, you know, not much of their shoe. I need the protection. I need something. I feel like I need something to keep me from stepping on a stone and things of that nature. But how does that work for you without the shoes? Is that a problem or what do you do when you come across those types of situations where there's debris that you have to run across?
Well, at the moment, I run, if I'm running on grass or the downs, if I go back to England, I used to live on the south coast with the South Downs. I found that, you know, grassland and downland and that kind of, I'm completely fine. And you obviously watch with your eyes very much more closely. Mm-hmm. I have become less. It's quite nice in a way. I've become much more focused on just in front of me, which in some ways is quite nice because you're kind of in that space. Mm-hmm. So I keep an eye and it's absolutely fine. Obviously, the track's absolutely fine. And the road, it depends on whether it's a little bit more rocky a road. Mm-hmm. But I've found that my soles of my feet have got incredibly strong and incredibly tough. And I can, obviously, I love running on beaches, but the really, really kind of rocky terrain of mountains which I've been in, I can walk there, but running is very, very ouchy. Mm-hmm. So I've got just normal socks. I mean, you know, socks, waterproof socks that I'd put on. And I've seen online these wire shoes that are like Vivo Barefoot, but they're apparently wire ones, and you and there's a long waiting list and they're not arriving till July. Mm. Because I might want to run really off-road, and I'm a runner in my heart, so if my barefoot running restricts me being able to run fast, then I'd like to be able to run with that action. So I'll see what they're like. But at the moment, I am absolutely loving having no shoes at all. I don't even own any shoes. I've got some little sort of beach socks I wear to kind of walk around, mm-hmm. if I'm in the streets and things. But I'm not sure. I'll, you know, as I said, somebody asked me on my blog the other day, they said, oh, but what about running on rocky terrain? And I said to them, you know, I think even the Tarahumara, the mm-hmm. tribe of runners that Chris McDougall wrote about, I think even they would put little, you know, kind of soles on, right, to protect their feet. So at the moment, I'm a runner first, and I'm going to see what happens as to whether, you know, whether if I'm going to be on really difficult terrain, whether these wire sock things I've ordered, they're Free Your Feet, I saw they were from. So okay. But in general terms, I'm finding that, you know, just terrain that isn't too terrible. My feet have got very strong, and I was on the mountain path here. I went around along the road, along a couple of beaches, then there was a rocky path, and I'm okay when it's not too, you know, when there's a few rocks, you just kind of keep your eyes open, really.
Right. Well, and you know, sometimes that's what you do, even when you got some lightweight shoes on, because even a good sharp stone with a shoe on will still get your attention. So you kind of got to always be paying attention anyway.
Yes, that's right. Absolutely. It's the same. It is the same.
Definitely.
It's, yeah.
Another question that I'm sure folks have, and I feel like I might have a bit of a handle on this one, but I'm still going to ask it so that you can, we can address it for them. What about maintenance? What about how to, you know, like, people get their shoes for support, for, you know, beyond just the protection of the environment, but to have some support and keep their arches in position and things of that nature. What have you done, or what are the things that you have done to strengthen the muscles in your feet to improve the mobility, things like that, so that, you know, for that argument of, oh, I could never go barefoot because I have this, that, or the other. How is you take care of that?
Well, I've just made a vlog this morning with all the foot exercises, funny enough, which I just put up this morning. Because I had a lot of problems with my left arch, which was dropped. And I was told by a lot of, you know, podiatrists and osteopaths and people that I should absolutely never not support it. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, my osteopath in London, who is fabulous, because I went in and said to him, I'm going barefoot. It was like a confessional because, and he was great. He's been very supportive and he has given me lots of exercises. So I made a vlog this morning about the exercises I do, which are a range from rolling your foot on a lacrosse ball to pulling the arch up. You kind of pull it up, you go along the floor with your toes. There are you know, heel raises, balancing on one leg with your eyes closed, jumping up and down off a curb. I mean, there are masses and masses of exercises, but again, they need to be done with consistency and continuously. And it's really, really a case of taking it very, very slowly, slower than you'd think to go barefoot. And also then the actual act of going barefoot strengthens you. So, you know, as I said, when I first was doing it, I was only running every third day and walking everywhere in my bare feet, doing lots of step ups, really, really good barefoot step ups. And I think that it depends. What, you know, how people have got to think of it as a long, long, long term. I think that's the key. And of course, that's not always, that's I think why it didn't work for me in the past, because I always had a race goal. Whereas when I started doing it now, I went, right, I won't race. And I shall literally, because if I have a race in, I'm going to be pushing and I'm going to be rushing it. So I took any kind of competition out so that I could just get myself running. And then I've entered a 10K in Valencia in November. And I looked at the course and it looks really smooth and fabulous. And I thought, oh, yeah, I can run that in my bare feet. So I've got a kind of goal, but that's the first time. And it will be, over a year from when I started going barefoot.
We'll definitely make sure to link to that vlog post. And I think you'd probably agree with me, Julia, but you know, whether somebody wants to go with barefoot or not, these exercises are still going to help you. They're still good things to do to strengthen the muscles in your feet, which is going to benefit you, reduce injuries, just make you stronger, healthier, things of that nature. So definitely check that out and maybe try to add some of those things to your routine, whether you want to go barefoot or not. I think they're beneficial for you.
Absolutely. It's what I said in the thing this morning, in the vlog this morning. I said, to be honest, our feet, whether we are going to go barefoot, whether we're going to run, our feet carry us around all the time. So actually, keeping them strong and healthy is good anyway. Absolutely.
Yeah. And folks that listen to the show regularly know that that's something I've talked about several times with my background is in sports medicine and athletic training. So, you know, I recognize how important it is to take care of your feet, no matter what you, like you said, whether you're just going to walk around and be a normal human being or whether you're going to be a runner, it's an important thing to do. So, As we're getting kind of to the point of wrapping things up, Julian, I feel like we could probably keep going for another couple hours, but at some point we're going to have to put a bow on this thing anyway. The way I enjoy kind of ending the show is to just kind of step back from kind of your specific story and kind of ask what I like to call a philosophical question. So it's very open-ended. You can go obviously any direction. I've had folks that have answered with one or two words, folks that answer with a few sentences, and folks that have answered with 8, 10, 12 minutes worth of an answer, and all are acceptable, all are you know, welcomed. However the spirit moves you to answer this question is, I guess, what I'm trying to say. And this will kind of be where we'll put the bow on things for today. But I'd be curious with your, you know, with your experience in the sport, with the many years that you've been a runner, what does running mean to you now? You know, earlier in your career, I think it probably would be safe to say that it was more competitive. And now that's, while you're still competitive with yourself, that's not the main driving factor, I don't think, anymore. But what does running mean to you now? Why do you still run, I guess, maybe is a better way of asking it, at this point in your life?
I think that actually always my running has been a spiritual journey, really. And spiritual, I mean, it's such a loose kind of term. Mm-hmm. But I think that I think the hazard for me was that I was a fast runner, but actually it was the way that I came face to face with myself, because I've always seen that running was my art, running was my expression, but it was also the place where I got caught up with my ego. So everything else in life, I've never been particularly ambitious. My work's just flowed. It's just happened. My writing just happens. My blogs just happen. Everything in my life has just been, you know, quite flowy. But for running, I wanted some kind of immortality, and my ego got all caught up in it, which meant that it was both my nemesis in that it brought me down, and every single time that I was striving to try and get this immortal time or get this, you know, place in a games or win, what would happen was I would come bang face up with myself to see that that wasn't the truth of my spirit, and that was my mind and my ego, and it was taking me away from myself. And that was when I overtrained, when I underate, when I did everything that was at odds with wholeness and health. So it was a challenge for me. And again, I was always somebody who was very aware and very interested in the human condition, and also the spirit, the spiritual condition. And it was an ever a kind of seeking thing for me. So I've always been a seeker, let's put it that way. And running was where I saw my kind of darkness, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And that was the irony of it, that it was my art, it was my creativity, it was my joy, but it was also, as I say, my nemesis. But it was also my salvation in that I stayed on the running road, mm-hmm. because I recognized that if I left the running road, life was, inverted commas, easier. I didn't have to come up against this desire to win. I didn't come up against these feelings of not good enough, not should do better, all those. I never came up across those, which is why when I was coming up to 40, it's why I went back in to unravel my injuries, because I could have left the running road and I would never have ever really learnt. I would have not had to go in deeper into that place of pain. So I went back in to try and unravel it. And then by the time I was in my middle 40s, I was running very fast again, and I had freed a lot. So I think that what I'm finding as an older runner is that now I really, really can run free. I really can run in the step. I can really stay in that step. And I'm also interested in setting goals, because I think it's only by setting a goal that I'm going to find out whether I truly am free, because it's only when I set myself, you know, intervals to do in certain times, races that I'd like to see how fast I can run, that I find out where that, yeah, what I call that kind of ego and mental torture was. So I think the reason I keep running is because it is my art, it is my expression, and I want it to be true, and the kind of zen of running, that I am literally able to live what I teach, which is about being in the here and now and staying in the moment and being free and listening to our inner voice and being absolutely who we truly are. But I know that for me to do that, setting goals is part of it. Mm-hmm. So therefore, it's been a journey from the moment I arrived, really. I think that's it. Does that say it?
I think so. That's why I love these questions, because sometimes they're a little bit hard to answer, but it gets to the heart of the matter, and I think that you did that very well. So we'll allow that to be the place we'll put a bow on this. And again, guys, don't forget soulsjourney.com, and like Julia kind of corrected me halfway through there, it is SOLES. I forgot to clarify that at the beginning. So soulsjourney.com is the website. Soulsjourneytv.com is the vlog, if you want to check that out. And on the socials, you got Twitter at Julia Taylor, the number one, Instagram at Julia Kai, C-H-I, with an underscore at the end of that. And on Facebook, you can find her there. Just search for Julia Kai Taylor. And again, as always, we'll have the links to everything that we talked about that makes sense to link to in the show notes for today's episode, disruns.com/425. So, Julia, thank you. Thanks for taking the time today. I'm glad we're able to connect and chat a little bit and hear more about what you're doing and what you've got on tap and what the future holds for you.
Thank you.
Certainly looking forward to staying in touch, and we'll see what happens. And again, thanks for the time and all the best going forward.
Thank you. I've loved it. Really loved it. Thank you very much.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope that you enjoyed the conversation between Julia and myself. And as always, I would love to know what stood out to you from this episode of the show. What was your takeaway from our chat today? My takeaway maybe is a little bit different than normal. But whatever. It's my takeaway, right? It doesn't have to be something that's a little bit more verbatim or a little bit more of one thing that stood out. Although obviously that's fine if that's what it is for you. But my takeaway from this episode kind of has to do with just Julia, you know, and the fact that she's been running for so long, for many, many years at a high level, and how she kind of continues to reinvent herself and, you know, kind of change things up. So, you know, like, you know, just the quick summary, you know, going from running barefoot as a child, running high level international meets, obviously running with shoes. And now going back to barefoot, she talked about doing different distance races from the track to the marathon, to the roads, to the trails, to whatever. And the reason that kind of all, you know, that just her whole story in general kind of stands out to me is because, like a lot of you, I want to be running for 20, 30, 40 years down the road. And how does that happen? How do we maintain that passion and that desire and our health to keep doing that? Is that we have to continue to reinvent ourselves. I mean, she even talked about the fact that, you know, she's still competitive, but she has to have new markers for what, you know, what is a quote unquote good performance, new goals to aim for, because, you know, she's not at the point where she can run like she could when she's 19 anymore, even though that's what the voice in her head is telling her that she can still do. So she continues to reinvent and continues to find new ways to push herself, to challenge herself, but most importantly, to keep running fun. And that is the takeaway for me, that we need to, you know, we can have our goals, we can have the things that push us, but we also need to be willing to change those things, to change those targets, to change those markers, to change those goals as we go forward, because we're not going to be in the same place, you know, in 10 years, in 5 years, in 2 years as we are right now. So, you know, as our lives change, as our running changes, our targets need to change so that we can continue to enjoy ourselves, continue to have fun, and continue to have something to work towards. Whether that's a time, whether that's just a mileage goal, whether that's just for the enjoyment to meet people, whatever it might be. And without having a nice fancy way of saying it, that was the takeaway for me. That was the reminder. That was the thing that really stood out to me during our chat, or during my chat with Julia. So I would love to know what it was for you. What was your takeaway? What was the thing that stood out to you? What was the overarching message or theme or whatever it may be? There's, you know, no right or no wrong answers when it comes to the takeaways. So let me know. Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com. Or better yet, you can head over to the show notes for this episode, which you can find at DizRuns.com/425, and leave a comment there. And that way other folks can see it and learn from it and soak it in as well. So that about wraps it up. Don't forget to get yourself entered to win a free pair of shoes, a free pair of Nike Pegasus 34s from the great folks and the really, you know, they've been a great chance to get to know them a little bit more and looking forward to maybe working with them and doing some reviews myself. But definitely check out all the resources over at runningshoesguru.com. And again, the link for the giveaway, runningshoesguru.com/giveaways. And don't forget that S. There's an S at the end of giveaways. And make sure that's on there. And as per usual, or as promised, the link will be in the show notes. If you forget it, you can't get it to work for some reason or another, DizRuns.com/425. And a note on the giveaway, the entry period is only 1 week long. So with this episode coming out on the 12th of June, the giveaway winner will be announced on the 18th of June. So if you listen to this after that, after the 18th, you can still try to, you know, buzz over and see if that link will work and you can get entered for the next giveaway. Or, you know, stay tuned because, you know, when the next giveaway, it's a monthly giveaway, when the next giveaway is announced, it will be announced here as well. So time sensitive on the entry from runningshoesguru.com. Again, runningshoesguru.com/giveaways. And with that, go ahead and wrap this puppy up. Thank you guys for listening. I hope that you enjoyed this episode. I hope you got something out of it. Love to hear what that would be. So let me know. But until next time, thank you for listening and definitely looking forward to talking to you again soon. Take care, guys. Thank you.